Hi, I'm Dan from Desert Island Dix. Today's guest is the very wonderful Ben Bailey-Smith, also known as Doc Brown. He's a musician, he's a comedian, he's an actor. He does a bit of everything. I mean, you just got to go online and try and write a succinct biography for him to realise that it's quite difficult because he's up to loads of stuff, but he's a fantastic guest. Obviously, I'm biased and I always love the guests that we have on Desert Island Dix, but I think he was a particularly strong one today. So I hope you enjoy it. Just a reminder, we've still got tickets for our live show at the Bedford Pub in Balham as part of the Cheerful Earful Podcast Festival featuring the amazing John Robbins. That's on sale now and it's Thursday the 6th of October, so make sure you come along to that. There's a link in the description of this podcast. We've also got the information up on our Instagram and Twitter at DixPod, so check it out. But right now, let's get on and listen to the podcast. It's Ben Bailey-Smith, aka Doc Brown, here on Desert Island Dix. Hi, I'm Dan Benedictus and welcome to Desert Island Dix, the show that sees you marooned on a desert island after a plane crash with the worst people and worst things imaginable. Who they are and why they're a dick is up to our guest. And here to share their Desert Island Dix with us today is actor, musician, comedian, podcaster and more. He's an all-round polymath. It's Ben Bailey-Smith, also known as Doc Brown. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. I'm feeling good. I've got that Friday feeling, you know. I feel very positive, so I've got to turn my brain around to get really nice and negative for this this particular concept that you've come up with.
Well, maybe it will just sort of make sure there is no negativity left in you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, think of it as a purge, a cleanse, you know.
Yeah,
and
good shout.
Hopefully it won't get you too riled up. I mean, you know, you're involved in so many different things. Does that mean that you're, you know, a relatively calm person and methodical, or you know, do you kind of get quite passionate about stuff and riled up easily?
No, I think I'm very, very calm, which means if I do get riled up, it's a problem because it's very rare. So I'll explode. I have one daughter who's very similar. Like, she never gets upset, but that occasion that she does, you got to batten down the hatches because it's going to get nasty, you know. Whereas the other one, it's just like she's always flying off the handle every day. So this is totally different.
Don't take her that seriously.
Yeah, I just don't see any point in getting worked up about stuff. I'm just more of an observer. I think about it. That way you do get things done much more efficiently if you just watch. You just watch and observe and take a breath and then make your decision.
Yeah.
If you're a reactive person, I think, you might be more well remembered, I suppose. You might be more like highly regarded, but you're going to make a lot of mistakes, man.
Do you know what? It makes perfect sense. And I'd like to say I'm similar, but then I think back a few hours to getting the kids ready for school this morning, and I don't know if it's true all the time.
Yeah, just lose it.
Yeah. Okay, well, look, let's get into it and see how we get along then. Who's going to be the first person joining you on the island?
Well, this is actually really tough, man. I found all the other questions way easier than people. Do you know what I mean? Because first of all, like, the first thing that came to my mind is if I was on a desert island, like, I would be on that list. Do you know what I mean? I have, like, being alone for too long, I get so irritated with myself, you know? Just find myself going, oh, shut up, like, to my own brain. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, I thought it'd be a bit too existential, including myself. But the first three people that came to mind were me, my dog, and the traffic warden who patrols Willesden Lane. Like those three people. But then I realised there was an animal, so I cut the dog out. And then I also realised that it's just too colloquial. You know, my local traffic warden probably doesn't mean a lot to other people. It means a lot to me though.
Yeah.
So I then started thinking about people that everybody knows, man. And the first place my head went, which is probably the first place a lot of people's minds wander, is to Jeremy Clarkson. But then I thought, actually, I'd take all three of those dickheads from the Grand Tour and stick them in. All irritate me equally. And then that's a bit boring. So I scratched them. And also thought Clarkson's just a bit too obvious. He's just, you know, his sort of raison d'etre is to be an obnoxious dick.
Yeah,
so I thought it was too obvious. So then my mind went towards Prince Andrew.
Okay.
And I settled with him. I thought, yeah, definitely would not want to be spending any lengthy amount of time with that guy. You know,
yeah.
Just someone so full of shit as him. You know, I mean, clearly he's an innocent man. I mean, it's a totally innocent man who paid a person that he'd never met £12 million. Just one of those things that happens.
Yeah, we've all done
sometimes
it.
Sometimes in your life, you know, we've all done it. We've all been there. Just never met this person, but I should probably give her 12 mil. Being that I'm an innocent do-gooder. So yeah, I don't trust the man. I don't want anything to do with him. So to have him on a desert island with me would be up there with my worst nightmares, definitely.
For him, it's just that he's such a great poster boy for sort of privilege and not realizing the extent to which you're wrong about things, you know, just that self-belief.
It was just a normal, everyday, run-of-the-mill shooting weekend. I see. Yeah, absolutely. That how it bugs me, that kind of, just no concept of other people at all, really. Like, what other people might think or feel.
And just that sort of, I'm going to go and give this interview. Don't worry, it's fine, because once they hear me talk, everything will be settled. It's just that level of, I mean, like...
Unreal.
Yeah, we can all do with a little bit of that self-belief, but there's probably a point where there's definitely a line when you're like, you are so far past real life.
Absolutely shocking. I mean, as actually a friend of mine who interviewed him, Emily Maitlis, and I spoke to her about it, you know, because I was just fascinated by it, having watched it, the whole thing. I just couldn't believe the level of scoop. When I spoke to Emily about it, she said to me, dude, like, no one was more shocked or surprised than me. She said she went in that day expecting to just get PR'd up the wazoo. Do you know what I mean? You can't ask this, you can't ask that, you can't ask this. She said there was just nobody there. Like, nobody approached her, no one said, like, she just had this time. She's like, so I've just got the whole hour and I can just ask what I was like, just go on with it. She couldn't believe it. She was shocked. And then she didn't even get most of her bombshell questions out, because he was just dropping bombs left, right and centre himself. She was just sat there in shock, not really having to do anything, just going, are you sure you want to say what you just said? Because that sounds terrible.
Yeah, you almost want to coach him, be like, do you think this is going well? I mean, as an interrogator,
she could not believe her luck. So like, she came away with everyone saying, oh my god, Emily's like blown this thing wide open, but actually she was like, nah, he kind of did it himself, I was just there.
Yeah, I mean, extra credit for just keeping a professional straight face and not just going, whoa, yeah, mate, do you know what you just said?
I know. But she's so smart and she's so sharp. And she's so pro. Like, there's no one's ever going to pull the rug out from under Emily. There's no doubt about that. But yeah, regardless of your own intelligence and professionalism, it was an amazing job to sit there and just go, wait, what? To not do that was exceptional self-control, I think.
Yeah. So spending time with him on the island, I mean, I just think on a practical level as well, like, you know, I think... Because on one hand, you know, people say about, like, the royals, oh, you know, they can get stuck in and work hard and stuff. But I sort of think, well, maybe. You've also been looked after very well for a long time, you know. Mm. And I just think, you know, do you think he's going to get his hands dirty in terms of, like, chores and stuff like that? He's not giving you much help, I don't think.
He's not going to help. I mean, does he know how to start a fire even? I see him being completely useless. Just one of those. Just making that noise quite a lot, which is unhelpful. I'd probably have to eat him.
Yeah. I imagine it'd be quite tender meat, you know. Quite an unstressed life, isn't it? You know, that's got to be a good thing. When they talk about one of the bad things, well, one of the many bad things about, say, factory farming is, you know, it's just stress does bad things to animals, you know.
Yeah, it makes them all sinewy and wiry.
You know, the last couple of years notwithstanding, you know, he's probably had quite a relaxing time of it. So,
absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Slice off a thigh.
So let's see who's going to be joining him. Who's the next choice on the island?
I think it's everybody's favourite DJ, David Guetta.
Yeah.
I've never understood David Guetta, ever, from like the start. You know, there's like loads of actors and musicians and, you know, they're really irritating and you hate that all their output and you just like, oh God, this guy again. But if you trace their career back, you go, oh yeah, but that's why, you know, that breakthrough hit or that amazing movie, or, you know, that's why people loved him initially. And he's dining out on that. But I go back and this guy's, he was always shit. I just don't get him at all. The music he plays is obviously it's not my music, so that's a bad start for any DJ. But for him to become this guy who's, and I'm going to sound like a hater here, and I'm glad because I hate him, so it's perfect. Like, you know, this kind of Super Bowl level guy, like DJs the biggest events in the world. You know, and when I say that, I mean he's getting up and pressing play, and then the rest of the time is just like Christ-like pose that he does. Don't understand it. I just don't understand it. Don't get it. I love DJs and I love the art of DJing, but I just don't see that that's what he's doing. I mean, he spends more time highlighting his hair than preparing any kind of mix for live performance. The last thing I saw him do, actually, which sort of solidified my sheer disdain for the man, was after the horrific George Floyd murder. There was a lot of celebrities, you know, saying their piece and asking for peace, and some of it was cringy, but it was all, you know, come from the right place. David Guetta created a remix of the I Have a Dream speech by Martin Luther King. And when I say remix, all he did from a rooftop somewhere in Los Angeles or somewhere like that, with lots of sort of like very hot looking men and women around him sipping champagne, he just like played a bit of the speech and then just went into the doosh, 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 arms up like Christ again. And he was like, he did this speech about, this is what we've got to do to bring the world together, man. And I was like, yeah, me and you, we were never anything, but if we were, we're fully done now.
But if only there'd been more mediocre house music, things could have been different.
Yeah. In a way, it'd be great to have him on the island just to watch him, like, without the one thing that sort of makes him a star, without the turntables, just to see what's left.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's not much there with the turntables. And without his hair products, like, what happens?
Exactly. Yeah, he's so weird. So, you know, I'm a like bedroom DJ, basically. I've played out a little bit. And when I hear about DJs who just have such a prepared set, pre-mixed, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think, for me to stand there for an hour pretending to do something which, you know, at his level should be pretty easy.
Yeah.
Like, it must be harder to stand there miming and pretending than it is to just play the records.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The one thing you have to admire the man for is the levels of shamelessness.
Mm.
I mean, there's not many of us who could just stand there for an hour occasionally twiddling a knob or adjusting the earphones
You know,
where they sit on our ears. I mean, it's admirable, really.
I saw a thing with him once. It was an interview and they were saying, oh, you know, have you had any mishaps or stressful situations? And he was saying, oh yeah, you know, like recently I was playing this festival, but I had this software malfunction. So all my tracks that I had lined up, you know, they weren't lined up. So I had to go and find them through all the files and folders that I have. And you're like, that's DJing. Like,
you mean DJing?
It's not even like you're pulling out a vinyl anymore. You know, like you're finding a file on your computer or on your USB or whatever. And then what? Because they're not all lined up in a folder. You've got to remember the order they're in. You're like, do you remember how, as a DJ, you know that thing of like reacting to a crowd and...
What a crazy story, Dave.
Yeah. And it's not like, you know, it's all so one BPM and one genre. And look, I like electronic music, so I'm not like dissing him just on that. I don't like his kind of electronic music. But the styles are varying so much that like if he just picked a random tune, it's going to clash with whatever he's playing.
Wow.
You know.
Unreal. So, and his audiences would never notice either way.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd definitely stick him in there. He's a man who's really consistently irritated me for Well, it's just well over a decade now, it must be, eh?
Yeah, I mean, a long time.
2 decades.
Yeah, I think so. A while. I mean,
he's never good.
Yeah, I think he's absolutely a bit of a stain on the industry, and yeah, he's not doing anyone any favors. And also,
people
just
who don't understand.
Yeah,
people who don't understand anything about DJing. Like, he's the guy that I think sort of validates their point of view that DJing is not musicianship. It's, do you know what I mean, it's just some twat who comes in and presses play.
Yeah,
you know, there's a lot of old school musicians feel that way about DJs and other people who just don't understand the art form of DJing. He's detriment to all of us. Like, he's a problem for all of us because he is that stereotype.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Definitely, definitely. And yeah, just a big ego to have on the island with you, and you've already got one pretty big ego, so yeah.
Here, man, Prince Andrew, yeah. You know, and how small is this island? Like, where can I go for some respite?
Okay, well, let's see who's gonna be the final piece in the puzzle. Like, who's the last person joining you?
Well, I had a whole long list of obnoxious people. You know, Boris Johnson was in there, Piers Morgan. And I started to realise there's a pattern. These are all people that are really, really obnoxious. Really arrogant, obnoxious, loud, fancy themselves people, which are the kind of people that it's easy to hate. And then I thought again, oh, probably he's probably had Piers Morgan on this show 100 times, Boris Johnson on the show 100 times. And I suddenly thought, what's the only thing worse than being annoying in another human being, for me personally? And I realize what it is, it's someone who's really boring. Like, that's a worse crime in a way than being obnoxious, because like, Prince Andrew's entertained me with his obnoxiousness, as has Piers Morgan and Boris Johnson. Like, I've enjoyed the car crash occasionally and going, oh my god, the level of prick this person is is actually like outrageously entertaining, almost, if it wasn't so maddening.
Mm.
Whereas boringness, it's like, where do you begin?
Yeah.
And I think you begin with Michael Owen. I remember when he was a player in an interview one time, they asked him about like, what's your favourite music or like movies? And he goes, I don't watch movies. I was like, what? I remember watching it, like, who doesn't watch movies? Like, I just can't think of anybody who just doesn't watch a film.
Mm.
And I don't really listen to music. And then he'd talk at length about horses. And as his career's gone on, it's like it's kind of a weird habit of his. He just he'll talk and talk and talk, but he'll never really say anything. So it's remarkable. And he's like a famous pundit. People hire him every week on the biggest channels on the planet to talk about football. Why? You'll never hear a more boring person.
I wonder if it's like people mistake his sort of calm, quiet delivery for sort of intelligence.
Being assured,
assured
and smart and measured.
Yeah, because you can't have too many like passionate Ian Wright sort of characters, sort of, you know.
Yeah, that's probably what they're thinking, right? You've got to balance it out. Yeah.
Yeah, but also you can have someone who's calm and collected and just actually interesting as well.
Yeah. I mean, interesting things have happened to him.
Yeah.
You know, he's scored one of my favourite goals of all time for England against Argentina in 1998. You know, he was an incredibly exciting breakthrough talent as a kid. He's fought back from a million injuries. He's been a megastar. He even recently, something interesting happened to him. His daughter was on Love Island, you know. So suddenly his opinion was being asked about that. But he didn't really have anything exciting to say about one of the most exciting occurrences that's happened to an Owen for a long time. Bless him, he's just incredibly boring, and I'm sure he's a nice man, but if you're stuck on a desert island, like, it could be worse than being obnoxious. It could be worse than being arrogant, having someone who's like, how many grains of sand do you think might be on this island? It's an interesting thought, isn't it? Because I suppose every time the water laps the shore, it's washing up more, but taking some away. So are we getting more sand, less sand? Or is the median of sand really just staying the same in the time that we're here. I would have like brained myself with a coconut. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Within a couple of days, I've got Guetta to do like an acapella gig. Do you know what I mean? Just to break it up.
I think it'd just be like a pinball bouncing between the two groups. You know, you think, oh God, I've had enough of these egos over here. I just need to. Oh, Michael, what are you up to? No.
You'd have to break up. You'd have to have an Owen day. Yeah. And then an Andrew and Guetta day.
Yeah, definitely. And I think
try and stay sane.
Yeah, I wonder how he'd react to the other two. I don't know if he'd just sort of just sit there and really listen to them. God, actually, they've got some really good points, and you'd have to explain to him. You know, I don't know. It's hard to. I mean, you know, I'm not the world's biggest football fan, so I don't know an awful lot about him, but. I mean, it's hard. It's so hard to know. Are you thick? Are you like vaguely intelligent? Like, I just can't get much from him, you know. So it's like long term with Michael Owen. It's very difficult to know what he'll be like.
Absolutely, you're right. He gives very, very little away because I think there is very little to give.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So that's all you're gonna get.
It's such a shame when someone, you know, like. You know, my fantasy is like being a rock star or like, you know, being on stage to thousands of people or just like, just to experience that feeling of adulation and like passion and like, you know, that he must, you know, he scored goals for England in the World Cup. And it's like, I want the post-match interview to just be like, fucking hell, did you see what I did? That's been my dream forever. And I've just gone and done it. And it's just sort of like, well, you know, obviously, you know, good result. No, come on. It's a waste. It's a waste.
It's a shame, isn't it? But that's what we have. And, you know, the best guys, the most excitable guys will, you know, will end up as the best paid pundits. I mean, Micah Richards is ubiquitous on screens now. He's on every football show talking about football in an incredibly excitable way. But I remember him as a player, and in his first two post-match interviews, he was like, I can't fucking believe it. He actually said that. And they were like, Michael, we have to remind you, I know you're excited, but please don't swear. And I fell in love with him immediately.
Yeah.
Because I was just like, that's real. That's real. He's reacting in a very real way.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Rather than bottling it all up.
Yeah, it's like Ian Wright. There was no situation. I've been lucky enough to meet Ian Wright a couple of times, and I can't think of a single situation that isn't improved by having Ian Wright in the room, you know?
There you go.
Like, it's the same sort of thing. Like, it's a very long story I won't go into, but I ended up watching a Star Wars film with him in the cinema, and coming out, it was like the first of the new lot, you know?
Oh, Force Awakens.
Yes. And coming out of the cinema, having really enjoyed a film with Ian Wright, who was just so excited. It was just the best thing ever, you know? And I just thought, I wish I could just, like, call on him. Ian, do you want to go and do something today? Like, it would just be amazing.
Yeah, well, maybe that will happen to me because he's just moved in at the end of my road.
Oh, well, you've got to link up because, honestly, it's only going to improve your life.
I bumped into him once and it was incredibly exciting. He was so generous with his time. He talked to me for so long that I had to leave.
Yeah,
I never thought I'd see that day, you know. Yeah. I was like, I had to wrap it up. I needed to get to work. Amazing guy.
Well, unfortunately, this podcast isn't about positivity, so
no,
we're gonna park the positive chat there for a minute. But you've got a good selection of people already, so that's the hard part over. Now, Ben, mercifully, amongst the wreckage of the plane, there was some food and drink left over. Unfortunately for you, it's your least favourite food and drink in the world. What are they, and why are they so bad?
Oof. Now, I food wise, drinks is tricky. I have to mull that one over. Food wise, I knew straight away it has to be shellfish because there's no shellfish that I like. Apart from, like, I might have like some minced crab meat possibly, but the texture of shellfish weirds me out, grosses me out, and sometimes the smell of it, sometimes the feel on the mouthfeel is, you know, -2, -3 for me, out of 10 for pretty much all shellfish, but particularly oysters, man.
Oh yeah,
that is the grossest thing ever. Like, whack open the shell, you get that smell, then inside is like someone's like tongue covered in mucus. And you just have you seen people eating them? Are you normally rich people? It's like makes the grossest noise, and they're like either chewing them, this jelly squidgy thing, or they're swallowing it right down. Either way, I'm just like, just watching it makes me want to barf. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Let alone the thought of putting one in my mouth. I just... There's so many close seconds. I mean, octopus was up there, which I have tried once. I never wanted to try it, but I thought, stop being a baby, Jimmy. You're nearly 40 years old. So I tried it a couple years ago, and I was like, yep, disgusting. Just what I thought it would be. Like, you know when people get angry? Oh my God, you have to try it. No, you don't. No, I don't, bro. Like, there's loads of other food that I like.
Yeah, definitely.
I really don't have to.
It's weird, like oysters, I wish I liked them, because it's kind of, I like anything that's got a bit of ceremony to it, you know. It's like, you know, opening up Tabasco, putting all the bits on, you kind of, it's like a shot, you know. It's kind of like a bit rock and roll. I've tried, and it's very difficult to, like, you know, because as a grown-up I don't want to be the one spitting out food going, you know, but it's,
I will, it's be that a, guy I yeah. will be that guy society party.
And it's such a big thing.
Just wrong.
And you're right, because if you try and swallow it, you're like, this is unnatural. I feel like a drugs mule here trying to choke this down.
Absolutely.
And if you try and chew it, it's like, I mean, this has taken a long time. Like, I don't... Yeah, it's like, oh, it just tastes like the sea. I'm like, the sea doesn't always smell that great.
That's the other thing. People say, like, it tastes like the sea. And I'm like, that's one of the reasons I don't like a lot of shellfish. Do you know what I mean? Because of the sea thing. That's not a taste that I'm into. Do you know what I'm saying? No, but you've got to try it. And then even when you do try it and you don't like it, they'll say, oh, but how did they prepare it? You know, you've got to have it from this place, or you've got to have it with this sauce on it. And like, no, I'm not going back in. Forget it.
Well, last time I tried one, I remember thinking, okay, I've given it a go before and it didn't work. But this time, I know, I'm going to put loads of Tabasco on because I like hot sauce, right? So I did that. Then the thing was still stuck a bit in the shell, so I tipped it back. All I got was just all this Tabasco running down my throat and, like, hitting. You know, like, because I like spicy food, but, you know, sometimes it hits you in the wrong point and it just makes you cough. So then I'm coughing and then trying
my eyes are watering.
Oh, man, it's awful. So, I think a lot of seafood promises a lot more than it gives. Do you know what I mean? It looks
spectacular.
Looks great.
It looks great, yes. Presentation and all of that. And also that there's so many elements of seafood that scream high end. Do you know what I mean? Caviar and lobster, oysters. They're all things that you think, oh, this is high end stuff, octopus. But I'm just like, keep it, man. Keep it, you weirdos.
Although, I wonder if it's just looks good because we're conditioned, we know it's expensive. Like, you know, like you think, oh, lobster looks so delicious and decadent. But then, like, I took my son to the Sea Life Centre recently and I saw some lobsters crawling around, and then I was like, they don't look delicious now. They don't look delicious when I'm watching Alien and I see face
spiders. Do you know what I mean?
It's not, weird, aren't they? There's too
not
much.
Not a tempting thing to eat.
No. Okay, absolutely. So we'll give you a lovely seafood platter with an extra side of oysters there, Ben. So.
As much raw fish as you possibly can.
And what are you going to try and wash it down with? What do you think your drink choice will be?
I think I'd wash it down with Southern Comfort.
Good choice.
Possibly the worst alcohol. I love alcohol. I love it. There's very little in the world of alcohol that I'm not willing to partake in or try. It's the opposite of shellfish. And there's loads of alcohol I've never tried. But listen, line one up, I'll give it a bash. Southern Comfort is the only one I think I've not returned to since the age of 15. I don't know why we had a bottle. One of us had a bottle. We went, there's like four or five of us, we went up to the Norfolk Broads, got the train from London after school one Friday, and we went and camped out there and just thought, let's have a little weekend, we'll get some booze, we'll get some weed, and we'll go out there. It's the kind of thing we used to do, like just get a break from the city. And I don't know who brought Southern Comfort, but it was all we had. And you know, like, this booze you would steal from an older sibling or a parent or something, because you couldn't buy it unless you had that, you did that thing of paying someone to, like, an adult. In the 90s, I think there was more, like, morally dubious adults who would probably do that. So maybe that's how we got it, but I don't remember. Anyway, it was all we had, so we all, like, drank as much of it as we could. And it's like a sickly sweet syrup. And I think all of us were roundly sick. I definitely was. I was, like, puking all weekend. Like, just foul, the foulest stuff. I'm not sure. What are you supposed to drink it with? Coca-Cola? That seems wrong.
I mean, it's already sugar. So sweet, isn't it? It's like,
what is it anyway? What is it? I don't even know what it is. What family is it claiming to be a part of?
I suppose, like, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's... Is it somehow bourbon related or something? Like,
maybe.
It's very much like sort of spirits with training wheels on, isn't it? It's like, you know, booze with stabilizers. It's sort of like, you know, if they had an honest tagline, it's like, it's spirits for kids. You know, it's like, do you know what I mean? Because you feel like grown up,
absolutely,
you're like, oh, it's
absolutely
like your introduction. It's like things like that. And like, you know, people used to drink like Archers and lemonade. It's
yeah,
like,
when I think of all the underage drinking that we did outside of the obvious, like cider, which was like the gateway to actual beer, it was all stuff like Alizé, Mad Dog 2020, Archers, like the sweetest, brightly coloured. I mean, when they created Hooch, it was just like, okay, now they're taking this is actually for children.
Yeah.
You've made alcoholic lemonade.
Yeah.
And that was the first like real alcopop, either that or Two Dogs. I think they were both Australian.
Yeah.
But when they created that, I was just like, okay, game over. We've got an alcoholic soft drink.
Yeah. I just love the juxtaposition of like who Southern Comfort appeals to and what it tastes like versus their imagery, where it's like,
yeah, how they try and sell it.
Around these parts, we do things differently. It's like, old man Withers pulls himself up a stool, he's whittling a stick, and there's an old glass of Southern Comfort. That's the way we do things around here. And it's like, no, like they're probably drinking moonshine.
Well, why didn't you spend some time making it not taste like shit with all these experienced old guys?
Get yourself a proper drink, boy. Try some of this. Wow, this is sweet. Didn't expect that. No, you didn't.
Oh my god, it's a terrible drink. Yeah. It really is a terrible drink.
Yeah. Oh man. And yeah, just if that's your only drink as well. I mean, with given the company on your own, at some point you're going to be forced to drink a bit, you know, just to try. And,
but then
the hangovers from that, and it's a solid.
I reckon
choice.
Prince Andrew drinks it by the bucket load. Pint of it.
He just find it a funny poor person's novelty. He'd be quite excited by it all, you know.
Yeah.
David Guetta's probably like, oh, I was sponsored by these guys once. Yeah, great. Okay, now, Ben, fortunately, you won't be without entertainment on the island. The plane's entertainment system continues to work, but just your luck, it only has two working settings. One is your least favourite film of all time, and the other is your least favourite song. What are they and why?
The film's really hard, so I'll do the easier one first. There's plenty of songs I hate, but there's only one that genuinely angers me. The only time I'd hear it is in the back of the cab because, you know, someone's got Greatest Hits radio on or something, or This Is Heart or something like that. Breakfast at Tiffany's. That song, there's loads of songs that are irritating. You just turn them off. There's loads of other songs that are just like, oh, why do you like that song? It's rubbish. Breakfast at Tiffany's I find offensive in its shitness. It's got like less chords than an Oasis song. It's the chorus itself is two notes. The melody's two notes. And I said, what about Breakfast at Tiffany's and dinner? Remember the film? And as I recall, we both kind of liked it. I mean, like, is this chorus still going on? And I said, well, there's one thing we've got. Are you taking the piss?
Yeah, it's one step away from being a siren at that point.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. And people are like, oh, there's such a one-hit wonder. Oh, really? What a surprise that they didn't have any other songs. Like, can you imagine what the rest of their catalogue is like?
Oh, man, yeah.
The songs that were not even close to being good enough to charting.
It sounds really like it should have been the theme tune to something. You know, like...
Yeah, like maybe it was in the running for Friends.
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't quite make
exactly.
it.
Exactly, yeah. It feels like a something that was a theme tune, then they released it. But it's not like... That was someone's band, that's what they released, and that was, you know, that was their song they were happy with, you know.
You're happy with it. You can picture the engineer going, wait, are you finished? Is that?
Yeah,
that's, oh, okay.
Okay.
No, cool. I'll invoice you. I just thought we'd be here for a bit longer. No, it's fine. It's fine. No, honestly, it's fine. I'll call my missus. We'll go out for a meal. Great. It's lovely to meet you guys. All the best. Do you know what I mean? Wow. It is the most basic piece of songwriting I think I've ever heard. And yet so irritating because basic songwriting, on the surface, there's nothing wrong with it. A simplistic idea. I remember reading interviews with like Evan Dando, John Lennon, Kurt Cobain, who all said like they were as inspired by like nursery rhymes as by anything else, because the simplicity of a melody is the thing that really like grabs somebody. And it's true, you know, you think about a lot of their songs. If you hear some of like Kurt Cobain's harmonies, if you take out like the rawness of the lyrics and the rawness of his actual sound of his vocals, it's really like playful playground music. Same with Evan Dando, same with a lot of Lennon's early stuff, you know. So there's nothing wrong with it. And like I say, there's nothing wrong with having only a couple of chords. Oasis proved that, you know, having incredibly catchy, basic songs. There's nothing wrong with it. But if you're gonna like take that and run with it to the extent that I can't even remember what the band's called, Breakfast at Tiffany's, the extent they did, where they're just like, it's almost like a middle finger to the history of music. Like, I'm just gonna nasally sing this. And the I think it's also the attempt at being quirky that annoys me.
Yeah.
Did you find the name of the band? What are they called?
Deep Blue Something.
Wow, they did, couldn't even bother to finish their band name. Wow.
Yeah.
It's deep blue something, guys. Think of something. Come on. Deep blue. Oh, fuck it. Let's just go and get lunch.
Yeah.
Deep blue something. And that just says it all. Couldn't even be bothered to finish writing their own name. It's the attempt at, quirk. You know, this is a bit different. This is a bit strange, isn't it? A bit off centre. It's a bit left field.
Yeah, you can imagine him. He's got like a waistcoat and a little straw trilby at an angle.
And you think at the same time, Jarvis Cocker is like effortlessly writing what seem like simple stories about life that are actually quirky and left field. And when they hit you, you're like, oh my God, this doesn't only speak to me. This feels like he's talking about the state of the nation, you know, where we're at in modern history. It felt profound within its simplicity. You know, that's happening at the same time that you're writing that. I would have been embarrassed to release it, but they did.
I feel like it was around for a long time as well. Like, I think it's
mate,
stuck
it's
about
still get,
for
go, a- go and get a cab now. You have to turn on like Heart. It will be played.
No, of course, but I mean, like, I don't know if it got to number one or whatever, but it felt like it was fairly big for a while. But yeah, I agree with you. I think, and it's exactly the sort of thing that will just stick with you though, because it's just that sort of annoying thing that catches. You know, like you'll be walking around the island, you catch yourself humming it, and then go, oh God, you know, you got to tell yourself off, like, stop doing that. You know.
Yeah, I don't get it with the chorus, because I hate that chorus more than any chorus ever written in the history of music. But I sometimes get caught out by the verse.
Mm.
You know, you'd be walking along just like you're saying. What is that? Is that the Beatles? Oh my God, it's not. It's the antithesis of the Beatles. It's the worst song ever. Fuck, did anybody hear me?
Yeah,
scary times.
It's a strong choice. Okay, well then, what's your film choice going to be, do you think?
This is much harder.
Mm.
It's much harder because there's so many bad films. And with films as well, they're not like songs. They can't just assault you like Breakfast at Tiffany's can. Just like weave into your crevice without you asking. You know, you're in a cab, Breakfast at Tiffany's plays. There's not much you can do about it. With movies, if your mate says it's terrible or the review says he's just not going to go and watch it, do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, I opt out. So it's a bit tougher, and I have to think about films that I was either forced to watch or had to watch or was stuck with, you know. And two came to mind, so I need to pick between the two because they're so completely opposite.
Okay.
One I had to watch for another podcast, a film show. Which was Batman versus Superman. And
right.
I think this may win because it angered me from start to finish. Although it did make me laugh. I credit it for being like its most dramatic moment, its most serious moment had me crying with laughter, which is where they finally show down after 3 hours of fucking nothing happening. Just brooding, two men brooding. In different places, and then eventually you get the showdown that you've been waiting for, because it's called Batman versus Superman. So they really should have a fight, and they have a fight, and obviously they're killing each other because they're both superheroes. And just as Superman's about to land the death blow to Batman, he mentions that his mum's name was Martha. I guess maybe he's praying to his parents or something, you know, because he's about to die. And Superman, just before laying the death blow, goes, "Wait, your mum's name's Martha?" He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "My mum's name's Martha." He's like, "No." And they stop fighting and they see that they're both, you know, just guys with mums who, you know, just want to do right in the world, and that fighting each other doesn't really make sense. You know, we're both of Martha, so let's just you know, do what we do best and fight crime rather than each other. I was watching it going, I was looking around the cinema, you know, have I like fallen asleep and started dreaming about the movie?
Yeah.
Did that just fucking happen? It, of course, when I came out and read all the reviews, it happened and it was a laughable moment. But how like unreal, like to write a 3-hour movie that was dog shit up until that point and just not know, like, we have to have the fight, but how do we get out of the fight?
That's amazing. It's sort of like lying there going, "Well, Dad, I didn't make it. I guess you had some pretty big shoes to fill." Wait, shoes? I wear shoes.
You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of that early scene in When Harry Met Sally, where they go on a really awkward double date, and Carrie Fisher's trying to matchmake, and she says to the awkward pair on their first date, says, "Oh, you know, her dad comes from Maine." And he goes, "Oh, really? Yeah, I'm from Maine." She goes, "Yeah, yeah." And then they just go back to their food. It's like, okay, that's not going to work. It reminded me of that. It was like, who gives a fuck? Who cares? Yeah. You're actually not going to kill him because it's just unbelievable. Actually, now that I've remembered it, I think it has to be my number one over my number two, which was mid-90s, which I really irritated me, but definitely doesn't get me as angry as Batman versus yeah. Superman. To give its full title, : Dawn of Justice.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I called it BVS Dodge. And it's worth dodging. Like, don't waste your life, 3 hours of your life. You will never get back. Mid-90s is, in comparison, actually not that bad. It's just, mid-90s is massively overrated. That's why it was in there with a shout.
Yeah.
By someone I really like, Jonah Hill.
Mm.
Written and directed a film about the mid-90s, which is my era. Me and him, same age. So like, everything about this is made for me.
Yeah.
I watched it. I've never seen a film like it. Nothing happened at all. It's just boys like walking around.
Yeah, I think with that film, it's just sort of, it's one of those things where you go, "Yeah, we used to do that. Oh, I used to listen to that."
Yeah.
And like, "Yeah, this is great." And then afterwards you're like, "Was it like what?
What's the story like?"
Yeah, we used to skate around and like,
yeah, yeah.
Like occasionally argue and listen to hip hop and. Yeah.
It's like and it's just so well received. That's why it was in my top sort of five and most annoying movies, because it's like, no, stop rating it. Nothing happens. You can't have a movie where nothing happens and there's no subtext other than, hey, remember that time. No, yeah. Shouldn't exist. But no, Batman versus Superman is way worse. So absolutely in there.
And at least mid-90s is quite short compared. It's not like a 3-hour long thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. It's 90 minutes. So, you know, if you've got nothing to say, at least have the decency to say nothing for 90 minutes rather than 3 hours.
Yeah.
And then have a Martha reveal.
Definitely. And I think, outrageous. You know, if you... I mean, Batman versus Superman, or whichever way around, is never going to get better with lots. You know, you're only going to find more annoying things about it. And as you say, it's a 3-hour long thing where it's just. And also, just from the beginning, you're like, Superman's got superpowers. Batman's a rich guy with gadgets. Yeah. Come on, we don't need 3 hours to discuss this.
Yeah, yeah. Superman is an alien who can kill anybody and is indestructible. So let's just cut to the chase here.
Exactly.
Batman needs to get some kryptonite ASAP.
Yeah, exactly.
No, we're going to have an hour of Batman brooding. Okay, now get the kryptonite. Oh no, we got to move to an hour of Superman brooding. Then the final hour is half an hour's brood each and then fight. End credits.
Yeah, okay. I think you made a very good case for that being your film choice. Okay. Ben, finally, the island is overrun by the biggest dick of all the animals. Which animal is it and why?
This was so easy, but it's quite specific. It's a fox,
mm-hmm.
but it's not a country fox. And, you know, I'm not into cruelty to animals. I don't believe that they should be hunted down in the countryside. That said, being a Londoner, the London fox is the specific fox I'm talking about. And yes, I am advocating hunting them down. Because, mate, these foxes, right, they're so ballsy now.
Mm.
My garden is full of them. They shit all over my garden. Sometimes, like, if I try and go to war with them, like, someone told me to, like, piss in the garden.
Yeah.
You know, like, male piss. So I find myself, like, pissing up against the fence or, like, filling a bottle with piss. Like, pissing in a bottle. That's where I'm at. Mm. Pissing in a bottle, spraying it at them. Because apparently, like, that's the territory thing. If I did that, I don't do it anymore because when I did that, they'd come right up to my back door. Just do a little shit just on the step. Well, like, I bought some new garden furniture and I got a big cover for it. Put the cover on. They're like, oh, you got some new shit, have you? Okay, how about this? I woke up the next morning. There was a shit on top of the cover, on top of the garden furniture.
Oh, man.
You know, they're actually saying to me, fuck you.
Yeah, yeah.
Not in those words. They're saying it like... Which is the maddest... What the fuck is that?
Oh, man. Yeah, definitely.
It's terrifying.
And they've just given up being nocturnal. They're just like, fuck it.
Oh, they don't give a shit about that anymore. Do you remember when we were kids? Mm. When you saw a fox, it was like seeing a deer in a movie. You know, there'd be this moment, the fox would be like, oh, my God, I've been spotted. And you'd go, oh, my God, I've spotted a fox. And you'd share this moment where the fox looks at you and be like, don't tell anybody. And then just disappear. And you'd be like, whoa. And you tell your friends, I saw a fox last night. People are like, what? Now, it's like you're at a bus stop and the fox is at the bus stop with you. Yeah. Like, when's this bus coming? Who's got snacks?
Like, did that fox just kiss its teeth at me? Like, what's going on?
And they're not mangy anymore. They're fat. They're plump.
Yeah.
I saw a family of them yesterday. Two little cute cubs just bowling along. Like, what, are we living in fucking Peppa Pig now? Like, it's just a family of foxes cruising along. Come on, kids. Come on. Yeah. Just creating two more little shits for me to deal with.
I had the same thing with foxes in my garden. I'm from Leicester and, you know, the fox is the symbol of my city. You know,
course,
I used to love seeing a fox, like you say. But, yeah, I had this one and, like, it was so brazen. It would just sleep on our lawn in the middle of the day. Like, it wouldn't even sleep sort of under a bush or by a tree or any shelter. Like, right in the middle, just like, this is mine this now, is mine. Fuck you. And it was freaking out my cat. My cat started shitting in the house. Oh. I was like, oh, man, like, you know, like in my son's room. And I'm like, oh, mate. And my son, he's got, like, fake grass in his room because we thought it'd be fun. You know, he's like, oh, look, you know, bit of fun. But when you try to clean cat shit out of fake grass, it's no joke anymore, ooh, right? So I was, like, watching this fox from the kitchen. I'm like, and I tried to open the window and sort of shoo it off, and it just didn't care. And I thought, right, it's right by the shed. It's got a metal shed. And I thought, if I can throw something against the shed, it'll make a really loud noise, scare it off a bit. I looked around the kitchen. I was like, what can I throw? And there's this little pack of, like, mints that someone had given me in a train station. I'm like, picked up this. And I'm like, put some mints in my hand. You know when you're just like, I'm going mad here. Yeah. Like, this is a man, like, losing the plot. And I ran outside and it had run off by the time I got there. And then I'm just, like, in my hall with a handful of mints, just like, what am I doing with my life? And it's like, at that moment, I was like, you know, Forrest Gump, and he's like, life is like a box of chocolates. Yeah. So I was like, life is like standing in your hall with a handful of mints. Because sometimes you're going to stop and look at yourself and be like, how the fuck did I end up here? Do you know what I mean?
I thought you were going to reference Point Break, that bit where he gets frustrated and shoots at the sky. I thought you're going to, like, lie on your back and throw the mints at the ceiling.
Why?
Yeah, I've got a neighbour who feeds the foxes raw meat. So, like, I'll wake up some days and my garden will have, like, a raw chicken leg in there covered in shit. And then my dog will try and eat it. And it's like, oh, I can't deal with this. Who's feeding the foxes? Yeah. They're fine. They're scavengers.
But that's the thing, the shitting as well. Like, I had one day the other week, a fox had torn open our food bin outside, scattered everything everywhere, shat in the pile of food. And then I went in my back garden and there was McDonald's bags in there. So I'm like, so wait, you've come around to my house asking for food. You didn't like what you found. You took a shit and then you brought a Mackie D's round.
Crazy.
Like, what?
They bring the pups bring in stuff that they found. So it's like occasionally I'll get a shoe, do you know what I mean, a glove, the ball, like just shit just appears. It's very irritating. And that's why they pipped seagulls to my number one, because seagulls were definitely in there. Honourable mention for seagulls.
Oh, definitely. They're very much the flying fox.
They're similar, aren't they? The flying fox. And similarly, they've got attitude. You notice when you walk past them and they just look at you and they'll be like,
oh, massive.
They just look like they're laughing in your face, and those dead eyes, man. Those dead beady eyes. So they're a close second, because then they're not like interfering with me directly. Some parts of London though do get like seagull abuse. There was one time when the seagulls went rampant up Holloway Road in Islington, just tore the whole thing apart. Like, it looked like there'd been a storm or like a riot during the night, and they realised from footage that it was seagulls, like a mass of them, just on the rampage, turning over bins like crazy, pulling out bin bags, tearing them apart, nuts. They're terrorists, man.
Yeah,
vandals, crazy. Foxes, seagulls, vandals, rats. Like, they just get on with it, don't they? Just quietly do their thing.
Yeah,
scavengers. They do all the same things. Yeah. But they're just like, you know what? I'm not an extrovert. I'm just gonna do this my way. I don't want to be seen. You know what I mean? They're like the old mafia.
Yeah.
Then you've got these like John Gotti guys, like seagulls and the foxes, who just want to be seen. They want to wear the sharp suits. They want to be all over the news. Times have changed.
Yeah. Ben, do you know what? I think you've had a brilliant selection, and it's been really well argued throughout. So thank you so much for coming on Desert Island Addicts today. It's been a real pleasure. Now, you're up to so much all the time, but like, what are you up to at the minute that we should check out?
Well, I've just, you know, I just finished shooting an amazing true crime thing for BBC One with Timothy Spall, but I've no idea when it's going to come out, but that's going to be a mind-blowing drama and a true story as well, so really, really riveting. Look out for that. I guess maybe like the new year sometime. But like coming out now, in fact, on my birthday, on the 21st of September, is going to be the new Star Wars series for Disney Plus. It's called Andor. It's kind of like a prequel to Rogue One, so you can add that to your
That's a big one.
Force Awakens. Maybe watch it with Ian Wright.
I would love to watch it with Ian Wright.
If you can get hold of him, if I bump into him, I'll tell him, give you a shout.
And a prequel to Rogue One as well. I mean, Rogue One is like the best bit that's come out so far for me, you know. That's
yeah, like really sort of dark, kind of almost like a war action thriller kind of thing.
Yeah, what a credit to have. That's amazing. Yeah,
definitely. You know, I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
So that drops soon. And then, next week I start a new job up in Manchester shooting a rom-com thing for ITV. So it's a good life, man. I love jumping from job to job and meeting new people. That's why I haven't done stand-up for so long, because stand-up's just, it's amazing, but it's just so lonely. when you're acting, you just got like, you meet all these new people. It's like a team game, and you all work together to try and get this thing done and make it good. And I love finishing one and jumping onto the next. Yeah. So looking forward to the next adventure, man.
Nice one. Brilliant. Well, we're all looking forward to it too. So Ben, thank you so much for coming on Desert Island Addicts today. It's been really fun.
Cheers, man. Thank you.
So there you go. That was Ben Bailey-Smith there. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. It was really fun to record that one. We're going to be back next week with another podcast. As I said before, remember, you can come and see us with John Robbins live at the Bedford Pub in Balham on Thursday, the 6th of October, as part of the Cheerful Earful Podcast Festival. It'll be great to see you there. And that's it, really. Desert Island Dicks was a Sync Clap production, created and produced by James Deacon, hosted and produced by me, Dan Benedictus, edited by the wonderful Chris Attaway, and as always, a special thanks to John Deacon, the boss man. That's it, and we'll be back really soon with some more great guests here on Desert Island X. Thank you so much for listening. Tell your friends all about it, and that's it. Bye.